Thanks for joining us at Cults to Consciousness. This storytelling podcast is meant to be for entertainment purposes only and does not substitute for any medical advice. We may discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health a priority. Lastly, the opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the host.
I thought I was broken in some way, but I wasn't.
You preached about us as if we were abominations. We had neighbors that moved in from the city, and it was a lesbian couple, and I was told not even to look at them because they are abominations. There was a book published by a psychologist who, when I started reading this book, I had to stop because he said that it's safe to assume that no gay Amish exist. So in my journey, I found that it wasn't just the internalized homophobia from that. It was also the imposition of the erasure of queer Amish from literature and studies and research because of that kind of mentality.
Hey, my name is Shalise Ansola, and this is Cults to Consciousness, where we discuss leaving high-demand religions or organizations and finding healing and independence through awareness and true individual sovereignty. If you're only listening and you want to see all three of our faces today, go to our YouTube channel at Cults to Consciousness, where you can join in on the conversation. It means a lot when you can leave those words of encouragement for our guests who are coming on and bravely sharing their stories, thoughts, and opinions, and it helps boost the algorithm so more people can become aware of these groups. So today's guests, plural, this is something that we haven't really done before. We've had both of them on before to tell their stories within the Mennonite communities and the Amish communities. And now we're bringing them both together for a common goal of expressing the difficulties of growing up in these communities, being part of the LGBTQ community, the ways that it disproportionately affected them, and how they are doing now, how they've been able to unravel some of these doctrines and be who they are today. So thank you so much for joining us again, Hannah Prosser and Mary Beiler.
Thanks for having us.
I'll just let the audience know. We've had so many tech issues. It has taken over an hour to get to this point. We're very excited to be here and to be talking about this topic. It's very important to talk about. So thank you both for being willing to come on, share your experiences and share your perspectives on how the LGBTQ community is more adversely affected within these high control groups. So where should we start? I think let's just give a little brief overview of maybe a few of the rules within each of your communities, your settlements, because we are speaking on different groups here, the Amish and the Mennonite communities, which do have some overlap, but we want to make it clear that they're very distinct. And even within those distinct groups, each settlement, each community has their own set of rules individually. So it's not going to be an all Amish are this way situation or all Mennonites are this way situation. So who would like to start?
You want to go first, Hannah?
Okay.
Hannah, just give us a few things that you had to grow up with. What are the type of rules that you had to live by? What are some of the day-to-day activities that you were required to do, that sort of thing?
Okay. In the Haldeman Mennonites, which is also known as the Church of God in Christ Mennonite, we did not have musical instruments. Like, all of it was bad.
Hannah, I lived in 5 different Amish settlements. Do you know what this is?
You had a harmonica.
I sure did.
Oh, no.
In an Old Order Amish settlement. And multiple Old Order Amish settlements were allowed to have those.
Interesting.
Oh, that's why the Haldeman Mennonites think y'all are going to burn the Amish for some reason.
What about your head covering? So
the head coverings, the small everyday ones, actually kind of the back of them kind of look like lady parts. I kid you not. There's pictures on my TikTok of it.
Okay.
For church, we had to wear a tie-down head covering, which I kind of have a very wild representation of one of those on, just because I could today.
So with your community, Hannah, what were some of the other modesty requirements?
Females had to wear hand-sewn dresses with elastic in the waist and sleeves that went down to your elbow. And the hemline had to fall precisely mid-calf, because if it was too long, you were going to hell. And if it was too short, you were going to hell too. It made absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Whoa.
The mid-calf was the salvation zone, I guess, for hemline.
Okay, so Mary, let's get an idea of the community that you came from in the Amish.
Well, I lived in 5 different Amish settlements. Most of them were primarily Old Order Amish settlements. But inside of all of those communities, women had to wear dresses that were sewn on a treadle sewing machine, and they wear clothes like this dress kind of here that is a representation of that. It's clothes with straight pins. Mm. Here's a straight pin, if you can see it. There were rules about how long they had to be, and ours were supposed to be 8 inches from the ground exactly. If they were too short, you know, or too long, you were in trouble. We were not allowed to have elastic in our dresses. Today, because I'm in my home, I'm wearing this dress without a cape on because we would not wear a cape at home necessarily unless somebody was visiting.
And just so people are aware, I think most people know this, but the print, the fabulous print that you have, was absolutely not allowed.
Oh, absolutely not allowed. But the fabric type is the right type of fabric for like an everyday dress. And even like the settlements that I lived in, this color, even though it's solid color, is too light for the scarf, because we call this a kopdu. This is a kopdu. We have all different kinds of coverings. Little girls typically would wear their hair braided up, and they would have two braids. They would start right up here, have the hair parted directly in the middle. Then about here, you would start braiding. Then it would come down here, have another braid made. Then back here, have another braid made. I don't know if you can see that. And then at the ends of the braids, the ends of the hair would be braided all the way to the end. There would be yarn put in them, and they would wrap it up on the back of your head. And they would wear a black head covering. Do you want to see one?
Yeah.
So this is like an example of like what some little girls' head coverings might look like for everyday wear. And then in the settlements I lived in, when we turned like 12 years old, that age can vary a little bit in some of the different settlements. But when we turned like 12 years old, we stopped having buttons on our dresses, because up until that age, we would wear dresses that closed in the back and they would have buttons on them. And little boys would wear dresses as babies until they were potty trained, usually. And all 5 of those settlements little boys would wear dresses.
Maybe it's just because I'm pregnant and it's been on my mind. But did you guys use diapers, like disposable diapers?
Actually, we used cloth diapers. I know there's Amish people that use Pampers, but we felt like that was just too worldly.
Okay. Interesting.
So we used cloth diapers and we had to wash them out by hand. And oh my God, why are we going there? Because now I smell cloth diapers. We're going to go back to the 12-year-olds.
Yeah, go ahead.
12-year-olds would start wearing like a front clothing dress like this, and then you would have the straight pins in it. It was always really interesting to me because boys and men could have buttons on their pants, on their shirts, but women and girls like that were wearing front clothing dresses all had to use straight pins.
Quite a few different rules and regulations and specifications, very, very specific. So is it correct in my understanding that all of this had to do with keeping the male gaze away from women? It's all about making sure that you stay, quote, pure or chaste, and that no one looks at you in any sort of sexual way. Is that kind of the understanding around these modesty rules?
When you have modesty rules like that, what actually happens is it serves multiple purposes, because we even had like right down to the width of the folds in the back of our dress, and the length of those folds would be dictated by the atnu. The cape, how it was worn and everything, would all be dictated by that. But part of what it serves in this twofold, this multifold purpose, is it serves to keep women busy. When you keep people always exhausted, always busy, and you're doing it in the name of this is holy for you, it is good for you to submit to the will of the Lord, and then you're never having the time to actually like think for yourself or explore for yourself like what's going on. Mm-hmm. The purpose of it can vary. Some people might feel like it's conducive to protecting purity. But when you really go into it with protecting purity, I mean, it wasn't even just the clothing it was also like some of the mentality, like the booklets that we read, the literature that we read that talked about how we needed to not climb on ladders in front of our brothers.
You know, Mary, last night when we were live on TikTok and our live got reported for hate speech because we were talking about how dresses are not modest and they aren't modest. And I recognized it when I was very young because I wasn't allowed to climb on trees or ladders or turn somersaults. And I would point it out and I'm like, how can it be modest when I'm being told it's modest, yet pants must be more modest because boys are allowed to run and go do those things and climb trees and do all that. But I'm not allowed to because dresses are not modest enough, even though they are supposed to be more modest.
That's a great point.
So clearly, it's not even true.
Are you saying that us being told not to climb ladders in front of our brothers is a lie because it's not going to protect us? And it's not modest.
There's holes in this is what I'm hearing. There's definitely holes in this thinking, in this indoctrination, because on one hand, you are covered completely head to toe. And on the other hand, even if you are covered head to toe, there's things that you cannot do because it's still too tempting. So how did that make you both feel within your own bodies where you are constantly being scrutinized or sexualized by these men, by these people around you, by these adults?
I wanted to die over and over.
Wow.
I felt like I wasn't even a whole human being. How can you have a space to reach any form of self-actualization and joy in life if everything that you are is nothing but an object to be looked at, to be monitored, to be controlled, where your voice is given to you by the men in charge of you? Mm-hmm. Whether that's your father, your brother, your grandfather, the ministry, the men in the community, or even when you escape, like I did, like sometimes there's unpracticing Amish men that literally come at me and they lie about me because for some reason, it's almost as if they were indoctrinated to believe that so strongly that I am out of line when I talk about the experiences that I had. And so now they have to find a way to try to discredit me, even though it's easily provable what happened to me and what was done to me. Mm-hmm. You can literally go Google search. You can look up the court cases. If you really must have proof, go ahead, have fun. But people feel that indoctrination so strongly, and it's so difficult for them to shed that anybody that doesn't comply with that expectation and isn't being that good Amish woman, even outside in the non-practicing Amish community, has to be silenced.
Yeah, because even though you did do everything you were supposed to do, people who have seen your story either on our channel or most recently Soft White Underbelly know that that didn't protect you. That I would argue it had the opposite effect, because you are being hypersexualized and because these teachings are essentially teaching these young boys that women are property and that they can be used. And I'm so sorry that all of that happened to you. It's so awful, and I'm happy that you're able to speak out about it now.
Thank you. Have you ever experienced anything like that, Hannah?
I was taught I was property from a very young age. I was supposed to belong first to my dad, and then later I was, of course, I never married, but I was supposed to have belonged to a husband. Mm-hmm. Always property, always no voice.
I was supposed to get married that summer that I escaped, a couple weeks before I escaped. My oven told me, she said, when you get married, you have to do whatever your husband wants, whenever he wants. And that means inside the bedroom and out. And another thing they told me was, you know, when you look at a boy, look at how he treats animals, because that's often indicative of how he's going to treat his wife.
Wow. I mean, just the thought of comparing animals to a wife in the same sentence. I mean, I can understand saying if they're compassionate and they care for animals, but it didn't sit right with me when you said that. I was like, a wife is not livestock. So Hannah, what was your experience around the modesty? Did you feel like, I know there's a variety of different experiences with people in these communities. Sometimes they feel more righteous and they feel holy and they are accepting of the modesty standards because they want to do the right thing. Other times they feel more rebellious and they know that something feels off and they do feel sexualized. What was your experience?
I hated it. I wanted to wear pants or just anything I wanted. Even if it was dresses, I wanted to wear beautiful dresses, colorful dresses. I wanted the freedom of choice, and I did not have that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So when it comes to sexuality or sexual expression, we know that purity culture is very, very intense in both of the settlements that you grew up in. So maybe let's talk a little bit about the purity culture and then we'll get into how it relates to your sexuality. So if you want to just give us an idea of some of the rules as far as dating or courtship goes, or if you were educated at all about your menstrual cycle or about sex, anything that you'd like to speak on.
So with the Hold'em and Mennonites, any form of courtship is actually forbidden. But at the same time, they do not have any form of arranged marriages per se. Generally, a guy will pick out who he wants to be his wife, and then he tells the ministers, and then if the ministers approve at his congregation, then they'll go to the ministers at her congregation. And if they approve, then it goes to the girl's parents. And if they approve, then it goes to the girl. And there's no dating at all. You're either not engaged or you're engaged or you're married. And engagements are only 3 months long for some reason. I actually didn't know that when I came out here. I thought that was really strange when people would have really long engagements.
Okay. And what was it like for you, Mary?
Well, when I was 17, I started going with the young folks because that's what we did. We would get together on Sunday evenings and we would have a singing in my settlement. And then the boys, after the singing, would send their friends to a girl to ask her if the boy could take her home. If she said yes, then he would hitch up his horse and buggy and go pick her up. I eventually ended up dating this guy from a different settlement. They were a little different because they played volleyball on Sunday afternoons, whereas in my settlement, we were not allowed to play volleyball on Sunday afternoons because that was a little too much. Another thing is the way we were supposed to date. My settlement, we were supposed to sit across from each other after the singing. So the boy would take the girl home to the girl's home. And we were supposed to sit across from each other at the kitchen table with a light on. Now, that can vary greatly, really can vary greatly in Amish settlements. But in the boys' settlement, we were literally supposed to, the boy was supposed to go into the living room after he took the girl home and then sit on the chair, and the girl was supposed to sit in his lap. And in other settlements that I lived in, you know, some of the things that really affected me was like, I couldn't understand why it was that in some settlements, people practiced bed courtship where they went to bed together. Even as a kid, like when I was still in that settlement, even though like the rules were what they were, we were only supposed to go until like midnight. That was like the rule. Some settlements, it was overnight, and by like 4 a.m. when the father gets up to work that day, the boy is supposed to be gone.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard from someone else in our Amish interviews that the schnitz is after the singing, the boy would take her home and then they were supposed to sleep in the same bed and cuddle and kiss, which to me was just so opposite of the whole goal of purity and everything that they were trying to work towards as far as staying pure of the mind and the heart and the soul and all of that with all these modesty requirements. And then you just put them in bed together. It's very interesting. So different courtship rules with both of your settlements. So let's have an idea then from both of you what your education was like when it comes to sex education. Were you aware of your anatomy, of a man's anatomy? Were you aware of how intercourse worked, how babies were made?
We didn't have words in our language for our private body parts.
Okay. How were they referred to then? Or were they referred to?
I didn't have any words for them.
Okay.
The sex ed was non-existent. For example, this is a box that says do not open for parents only. First booklet, which is called The Ignorance is Not Bliss. This booklet is written for parents. It is not suitable to be read by children or young people. Please be careful that it is not read by those for whom it was not intended. We strongly suggest that this booklet not only be kept in a concealed place, but that you take measures to prevent their reading it in case they should come across it. Put this booklet inside a large brown envelope that can be sealed shut. Mark the envelope clearly that it is not to be opened. You will greatly reduce the temptation for a child or young person to read it without permission. If he or she knows, you will see the evidence that someone has been reading it. If you have suggestions or comments on this booklet or any of the others in this series, we would welcome hearing from you. The author is an anonymous Amish minister. It's published by Pathway Bookstores. This edition was reprinted in 2020. For girls, there's a booklet called To a Girl of 11. We could have a whole podcast and then probably two or three more about To a Girl of 11.
Can you give us maybe one or two examples of what's in there?
If you do your part to dress and behave modestly and do not go out alone in public places, you need not have any great fears of men with evil intentions.
Okay, well, we know that that's not true.
Yeah. And when you sleep, either be sure your door is closed or you are properly clothed or covered. Your brother, innocently coming upon you and seeing your partly uncovered body, may suddenly have strong sexual desires aroused within him. His intentions were not bad, but he suddenly finds himself the victim of your carelessness and the lusts of his own body. Although he may not bother you and you may never be aware of the harm you did him, he may well be tempted to sins of personal impurity, which many boys wrestle with.
Yikes. There's so much to unpack there. So this is what I was mentioning earlier, that they put the thoughts into their heads, like they're supposed to be attracted to their sisters or something.
They normalize.
Yeah.
The idea that it is normal for siblings to be sexually attracted to one another. And they also normalize making it a girl's fault, making it the victim's fault.
Poor girl is sleeping and she's getting blamed.
I was sleeping. I was literally sleeping in a dress much like this one that was just a lighter color. You still couldn't see through it. I was sleeping, but it was still my fault, according to others.
Wow.
That booklet. That teaching. These booklets have been advertised as preventative measures for parents to learn how to teach their children and prevent child sexual abuse since 1985.
Yeah.
And they are still in circulation today, Shalise. Not only are they still in circulation today, there is a social work services professor who co-wrote a book with an Old Order Mennonite man that recommends those booklets. She founded a nonprofit that received a grant and sent out 46,000 copies of that book recommending these to Amish and Plain Mennonite families as a preventative measure for child sexual abuse.
The thing that gets me is none of that is rooted in actual psychology or child development. It's just so off base.
Right?
There's so much wrong with that. It's not well researched. It's not current information. It's just outdated, wrong, based in fear, guilt, shame. There's just so much there that's not okay. Hannah, did you have similar experiences in your group? Were you finding that sex education was non-existent?
Yeah, it didn't exist at all. I had an eighth grade education when I was 13. My dad told me I was a woman. I learned the words from books at the library because my mom, we were actually not supposed to go to the library, but my mom would take us there.
So to bring this around to the topic that we really wanted to discuss today, I feel like all of that context was important, setting up what you were both taught and raised with, and the framework that you already had. And we actually didn't get into this topic in either of your interviews. So I'm interested at what point you started to understand that you had feelings that were not considered typical or quote normal in these communities, and the messaging around this homophobia within both of your communities, how that played a role in your mentality.
Go ahead, Anna.
So I was 9 when I actively realized that I'd known that I enjoyed looking at pretty ladies, right? Mm-hmm. But I think about 9 or 10 or so is when I really realized what that meant, that actually maybe meant that, you know, gay word that people talked about. And of course, being gay was forbidden.
So what was the messaging then, Hannah, in your church growing up? Do you remember any sort of sermons, what they would say about people who were gay? Did they call it a choice? Did they call it a lifestyle? Was there anything specific that you can remember?
It was all those things. It was a sinful lifestyle choice.
Okay.
There were definitely sermons about it. Man shall not lie with man. Woman shall not lie with woman. What a great sin it was. I felt like something was wrong with me. And I wondered for a long time, I'm like, why, you know, why do I keep looking? I thought I was broken in some way, but I wasn't, but I felt like it.
Yeah, you're having these feelings that are contrary to what you are being told is worthiness and being devout and all of those different things. And you're, I'm sure, feeling guilty about it, but you're not even sure how to put words to it, especially if there's no sex education. You're kind of being pushed to become a mother one day and a wife one day, belong to a man. And I can imagine that would be really confusing to deal with.
Yeah. And then I was also attracted, you know, to other little boys and stuff too. It was because I'm bi. And so that was confusing.
Okay. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. And I'm glad you clarified that, because I can imagine in some ways you felt that you were doing what you were supposed to be doing as far as attraction goes. But on the other hand, were you considering that according to the doctrine and what they were telling you, were you considering that maybe you were choosing to feel attracted to women, even though that wasn't the case?
I wasn't sure. You know, I kind of like tried to evaluate how I felt, and I was very attracted to my best friend, in fact, who is very straight. So there was this one time, I'm just going to do a little story time.
Yeah.
My family and I had went to my best friend's house after Sunday dinner. And we went down to her pond, and I talked her into going skinny dipping. And we got caught. And of course, I got the absolute heck beat out of me. And we weren't supposed to see each other for 6 months. Well, outside of, you know, like church and school and stuff. But yeah.
Within that story, did they assume that you had feelings toward each other, or was it just you were being punished because you were naked and you're not supposed to swim naked?
A little bit of both. I think they didn't really know for sure. And of course, I did not admit to being anything more than just innocent.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Mary, so in your situation, what were some of the messages that you were getting in church about being gay?
One of my first memories, I write about this in my book, actually. The messages that I got are a reflection of some of the consequences of telling my parents when I was, before I was 5, I don't know exactly how old I was, that I was going to grow up and marry a woman. Because even as I went through my life, I could never understand why. I could never grasp or fathom why it was that you tell me to read the Bible, you tell me to be like Jesus, you're telling me to be submissive to the will of the Lord, you're telling me that God makes everybody in his own image and light, and then you turn around and you're talking about people that are different from you just because they don't wear like Amish clothes, or just because, you know, they escaped, they ran away from the community or the settlement, or just because whatever. And also in the early 90s, when I was fairly young, there was a lot of talk in that settlement specifically about how the presidential election, there was something going on with that, and how, you know, we can't let those gays like really get what they want. And, you know, that will just destroy the sanctity of marriage, things like that. I could also read you this from To a Boy of 12, because that's another booklet from the series. It says, Satan likes to twist and destroy things that God created for a good purpose, and he has been so successful today that it is necessary for us to mention here the sin of sodomy. The name of this sin comes from the story in the Bible about the evil desires of the men of Sodom in the story of Lot. That is not the story of Lot. If you go, I digress. It talks about, remember how the men of the city came to Lot's house that evening. The two angels were there. These men were homosexuals. A homosexual is a person who is attracted sexually to a person of the same sex, a male to a male and a female to a female. Such a desire is not even natural. It is a perversion. These perverted men wanted Lot to give out the visiting men so they could abuse them in a sexual way. The Bible teaches us that this is a great sin, and it brought destruction upon the city of Sodom. As you can learn from the story of Lot, the sin of sodomy is nothing new, but it seems that in the world today, homosexuals are becoming more and more bold with their sin. You need to be aware that sometimes evil homosexual men lust to be able to abuse in a sexual way the body of a young boy. Do not trust a man you do not know and never consent to go with him in his car or to his house. And if your friends make advances to you that do not seem quite right in this regard, be careful, because homosexuals were demonized. They preached about us as if we were abominations.
Yeah.
When I had a crush on a girl, when I was first off, I said I was going to grow up and marry a woman. And then in later years, like as an older child, an adolescent, if you will, I had crushes, but I learned my lesson well to be silent about it. Mm. And then even later, we had neighbors that moved in from the city, and it was a lesbian couple, and I was told not even to look at them because they are abominations.
So what's going through your mind if you knew at such an early age that you felt similarly? How are you feeling? How are you taking all of this?
Well, I had to come out again as an adult, and I had to process the internalized homophobia that I lived with in order to be able to live my life my way and on my terms. And what's going through my mind is this. Are you familiar with the Trevor Project? Mm-mm. The Trevor Project is an LGBTQ organization that serves LGBTQ youth. They did a survey in 2023. They showed 41% of LGBTQ youth who took the survey seriously considered dying by suicide in 2023.
Wow.
And there's also data that shows that if LGBTQ youth have one safe person in their life, their risk of dying by suicide is greatly decreased. So if you know of any queer youth, they are human beings. If you believe in a God, then your God made them that way. And maybe you should stop judging them. And maybe you should start considering them as actual human beings. They deserve to live their lives. And just because somebody is queer or LGBTQ or gay, or just because somebody, you know, doesn't actually experience sexual attraction the same way as you, doesn't mean they are a terrible person.
Yeah. Were you aware of anyone in either of your communities who was gay and just kept it hidden?
No.
Okay, so it was that under wraps.
We were abominations.
There was rumors about a couple people, one who was a teacher, but they kind of investigated her and determined she wasn't. But, you know, it kind of feels like a witch hunt.
Yeah, it does feel like a witch hunt. And what would have happened if they would have determined that she was gay?
Then she would have been expelled and shunned.
Oh.
Who investigated her, Hannah?
Ministers.
Yeah, what does that even look like, the investigation?
What kind of education did they have?
Eighth grade educations. Shalise, you're probably going to cancel me for this. I got to run, so I'll talk to y'all later.
Thank you so much, Hannah. We appreciate you being on as long as you could. Because we ran into so many technical difficulties, Hannah did have to leave the conversation, but we appreciate everything that she was able to contribute and the perspective she was able to offer from the Mennonite perspective. So you and me, Mary, let's dive into the Amish community specifically. We were talking about the ways in which homosexuality was demonized, how people were too afraid to even come out and speak about their preferences because of the punishment. So in your case, in your community, your settlement, what were some of the punishments that you were aware of that would have been inflicted if someone were to find out someone was gay?
It wasn't even done. And I wouldn't say it was a preference so much as I would say is like, it's a, if your sexual orientation or your gender identity became known, it just wasn't done. It was like a non-existent thing. I never heard, I didn't know there were other people like me until I came out again as an adult over 10 years ago. It's quite, been quite a journey. But until I came out as an adult, after I processed all of the internalized homophobia, you know, I found out that there's other people like me. There's a website called LGBTAmish.com. And for the past 3 years, I've co-hosted a podcast with LGBTQ Amish and Anabaptist guests, because part of the invisibility has been having like one paragraph that basically says like LGBTQ Amish and Anabaptists don't, it just isn't allowed inside of Amish studies from researchers, etc. And then there was a book published by a psychologist who, when I started reading this book, I had to stop because he said that it's safe to assume that no gay Amish exist. So in my journey, I found that it wasn't just the internalized homophobia from that. It was also the imposition of the erasure of queer Amish from literature and studies and research because of that kind of mentality. Strict gender roles harm everybody, for the record.
Yeah, do you want to talk more about that?
Well, some of the ways they harm people is when you are sitting there and you are telling boys like you're just sexual objects, it's, or like it's normal for you to experience this, or you're giving boys ideas about what they're supposed to be experiencing in regards to their sisters, or like in regards to how they're supposed to be. It doesn't give people the ability to actually live their self-actualization. They can't reach self-actualization in their life because everything has been controlled by other people and society imposing that upon them.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So within those strict gender roles, do you remember having those conversations, or not even conversations? Do you remember hearing those things being preached about how your role was to grow up and be a wife and a mother, and how that kind of, how that affected you knowing that that's not what you wanted?
Like I said before, I wanted to die. I wanted to die many times over. Once I escaped and once I actually received like trauma therapy, it became a whole different world because I was able to reprocess the things that I had seen.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I learned is that when we are very harsh towards ourselves and when we hold these values that are incongruent with who we are fundamentally, it causes internal conflict that cannot be avoided. And when we believe that we're wrong for existing the way that we are, and we need to be fixed in order to be acceptable people to society, that's what happens. It causes people to want to die.
Yeah.
That's really dark, and I'm sorry.
No, there's no need to be sorry. That's your truth, and that's what you experienced. So I'm glad that you're willing to share and be so vulnerable about it, because that is something that's hard to talk about. So would you say that this was a big contributing factor to wanting to leave the Amish?
I would say it was a contributing factor, but mostly I needed safety.
Yeah.
I escaped because of the CSA that I experienced. That's what opened the route to access resources for me to be able to escape.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I could have ever escaped if it wouldn't have been for that. And that kind of sounds terrible to say, but.
And for those who aren't familiar, we don't have to go deep into any sort of details, but would you just mind explaining how you were able to get connected with the outside world and how that process happened?
A driver helped me out. They connected me to actual resources for people who are experiencing crisis. That was how I was able to build a support network or like a group of people to have the support to escape.
Yeah. For those who aren't familiar, you can also watch the full interview that we did with Mary. We'll link it in the description. And you can also watch Sins of the Amish, where you can see the court case play out and everything that Mary had to go through just to defend herself and try and get justice for what had happened to her. We won't go into details today, but we just wanted to let you guys know that that's available if you're interested. So is there anything else that you wanted to cover specifically when it came to the harms of the LGBTQ community within the Amish?
I've hosted a lot of podcast guests. So sometimes people really struggle with finding meaning in life because they get shunned for various reasons. Some of us, we are just like triple black sheep of the family. I would encourage you to go out and seek, like, you know, access to resources. There are resources out there. Sometimes it can feel like people really don't understand you, but not everybody has to understand you completely to be able to be supportive.
Mm.
There are people who will support you. There are people who will help you. It's a matter of like you are allowed and you deserve to live a life that is filled with joy. I think that one of the things that I would also like to touch on is that some of the reports that I have received from people have involved people who were run out of Amish settlements because it came out that they were gay. That's not right.
Yeah.
I would also like to say that as late as 2022, when I was at an Amish abuse awareness meeting, first it started with a talk on addiction. But before that, it was the talk about CSA. So we start from CSA, then we go into addiction, then we go into homosexuality, because apparently CSA is caused by people who have an addiction. That's the idea that I walked away from the meeting with. And then another cause of CSA, they considered it to be homosexuality. But I would like to ask you where your research is that shows that data, because I've been unable to find anything that substantiates that.
Just so I'm clear, they were trying to connect people who commit CSA with being gay.
Uh-huh.
Yikes.
And they were also trying to connect it with addiction. And inside some of the literature, there's recommendations for conversion therapy treatments. And again, I'd like to see the actual data that actually correlates the LGBTQIA+ community as being the primary perpetrators of CSA. Can we talk about the pastors within your pews? Can we talk about my perpetrator who's a deacon in the Amish church? Mm-hmm. Can we talk about your ministers? And can we talk about your bishop? Can we talk about the list in the Baptist church? Can we talk about the list from the Catholics and the Jehovah's Witnesses and the LDS? And the list goes on and on and on. Can we talk about the actual people that are perpetrating CSA?
And covering it up.
And are you familiar with the SMA insurance for churches?
SMA insurance. No, I'm not.
SAM. That was the wrong acronym. It's SAM insurance. They have insurances to cover the perpetrators of SA.
Wow. So they expect it to happen, and that's why they're getting insurance for this.
Yeah.
And you brought up conversion therapy, and I hadn't considered this before. I know that a lot of churches, Christian denominations, they try and convert people. They try and it's really disgusting, especially what they were doing in the 80s in Mormonism, for example, the shock therapy, really horrific practices to try and get people to not be gay. When it comes to the Amish, you said that you weren't even really aware of anyone who was gay because it's just not talked about. No one even brings it up. So did they have any sort of conversion therapy, or would they just immediately try and kick you out of the community, the settlement?
Well, if you look at the updated information about conversion therapy, it's really any attempt by any method of anybody to change somebody's sexual orientation or gender identity.
Okay.
And I hope I didn't butcher that description, but when you think about that, when I was made to walk in front of my stepfather so he could control the way that I walked because I needed to walk like a proper Amish woman and not incite people to lust after me. Or when I experienced corrective rape, do you think that's an attempt to change me?
Right. So it's more under the radar. It's conformity,
right,
versus outright acknowledging someone's gay and then trying to switch them.
And then, like I said, there were also recommendations for conversion therapy facilities, which would be more covert, I think, than some of the outright harm. But you have to also know that there are facilities with unlicensed services for Amish and Plain people. Like, they are unlicensed, but they're providing mental health care to Amish and Plain people. One of those facilities, like, for example, there's one place called Whispering Hope. It's actually on court record that that facility had nobody there that was qualified to perform the type of mental health care that they were claiming they were doing, which was rehabilitating a sex offender. But in the same token, I've also heard of gay people being sent to some of those facilities.
Okay.
Okay, so you're providing sex offender rehabilitation. You're unlicensed. You're unqualified. You have an eighth grade education. You went to Amish school.
Right. Again, it's not based on any sort of research or new understandings of sexuality, sexual orientation. It's just all outdated information, and it's extremely harmful.
Yeah.
So you've definitely come a long way, Mary, and it's been great to see how you've truly come into yourself, who you are now, the things that you are fighting for. You are actively on the front lines doing so much to help people come out of the Amish community and find peace and happiness. So is there anything that you want to share with someone who may be watching, who may be in a similar situation, as far as how you were able to deconstruct once you left the Amish and how you were able to fully come into your identity?
Actually, yes. I would like to encourage you to critically think, develop your critical thinking skills. Think about where your beliefs come from. Think about, is that something you wish to uphold, or is that something you wish to cast off? Is it something that actually serves you today and where you are? And how does it serve you? Does it harm other people? Or is it bringing other people joy? Are they telling you it's bringing you joy? It's bringing them joy.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Learn what consent is. Learn what personhood is. Go out and explore the world. Learn that other people are just people. We're all just people sitting here and doing the best we can. But when we sit there and we do not examine the belief systems that we were indoctrinated to believe, the belief systems that kept us alive in situations that we should have never been put in, maybe, or the belief systems that kept us alive during a time when we experienced adversity that other people might not be able to even comprehend because it's so atrocious. Those belief systems, it's okay to shed them. You're allowed to shed them. You're allowed to build a meaningful life. You're allowed to go out and be who you are.
Yeah.
And it's also okay to change your mind. You are always allowed to change your mind. I've done that a few times. It's kind of good. But, you know, like sometimes you really just have to like change your mind, you know?
Yeah, that's all great advice. Thank you for sharing that. So let's hear about what you're doing today. You're doing protests, you're speaking out. Let's talk about your podcast, whatever it is that you want to share with the activism that you are currently a part of.
Well, actually, we have received funding from non-practicing and practicing Anabaptists to have a group of us march in a pride parade this year as Plain Rainbows, LGBTQ, Amish, and Anabaptists, because representation matters.
Yeah.
Visibility matters. We matter. We exist. One of my first experiences at, I went to Denver Pride one year, and I ran into somebody that I've known them for a while, quite a few years. And I had a sign about Plain Rainbows. And she said to me, she said, I never even thought about it. But of course there's queer Amish. Of course we exist. You've just been erased, but also you exist and you're here. And I never knew that that's where you came from. Oh my God. I'm so glad you showed me. I'm not the only queer person. You know, like that was a beautiful reception.
Yeah.
I've had so many experiences from so many people from so many different walks and ways of life. I've gotten to meet like sisters of perpetual I can't even say the word right now. Do you know what I'm talking about? The nuns who go around, sisters of perpetual indulgence.
Oh, I think it's. I'm not familiar.
Like they're drag queens. They're drag queens, but they're. They're like an order of like the Catholic, like it's something to do with the Catholic queer people. I don't have words to describe them, but I've gotten to meet them. I've got pictures with some of them. Like it's amazing. I've gotten to meet people who come from various different backgrounds, and these people have all made an impact on my life. It's really, really vital that we have the ability to exist, because you cannot address issues if you don't exist. So first you have to exist, just like you have to humanize Amish people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that all Amish people are bad. I'm saying that Amish are people. And when you romanticize a group of people or you demonize a group of people, you are harming them.
Yeah. That's why these conversations are so important, because it is about the exposure, the awareness, the understanding, and also calling out the behaviors and the patterns. Like you just said, we're not trying to demonize entire groups of people. We're trying to bring issues and patterns to light so people can be aware of what's going on and why these behaviors keep happening, why it's more common to have abuse in communities where they're more strict and less educated on sex, less educated in general. And so I just think it's really important to have these conversations, especially drawing attention to the queer people in these communities. So thank you for coming on and being willing to share. How can people find your podcast and find you?
They can go to themisfitamish.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I'm here. I'm around. I did have one more thing that I wanted to say about how important it is to have these conversations.
Yes, please do.
Sometimes when we have these conversations, it makes us really, really uncomfortable. And sometimes it's really important to sit there and ask yourself, why does this make me so uncomfortable? What about this conversation is making me so uncomfortable? And then find a way to, like, you know, actually process that. Because when we do that and we ask ourselves that, sometimes we can sit there and have space with who we actually are. We can go explore who we actually are, and we can better understand ourselves. And not only ourselves, but we can also understand that at one point in time, we belong to an organization that has caused harm to people. And now, we are no longer a part of that organization necessarily in the way that we would be practicing. Like I consider myself a non-practicing Amish person. I'm no longer part of that practicing group of people, but we still can hold space for people to be part of that practicing group and still hold them accountable. That does not mean that we have to sit here and we have to pretend that every single person inside of that group is a perpetrator of abuse, but neither does it mean that we have to sit here and pretend it doesn't happen in that group? Because abuse is a worldwide problem. It happens in groups of people around the world. And we all belong to various groups of people.
Yeah, very well said.
Sorry, I have a lot of words, apparently.
No, please don't apologize. I think it's great. Everything you said is 100% valid, and I'm glad that you brought it up. So with that, with all those spicy words, I know you have a Linda Listen prepared that you would like to share.
Oh, are we ever going to be spicy today?
Let's hear it, Mary.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Sometimes you got to grab onto the good and hold on with all your might, especially when you see people trying, learning, growing, doing, accomplishing. It can inspire hope. Hope that humanity is not lost. Hope that humans can be and do better. And some days you need that reminder to get out of bed, to keep on, to hold your head up, to believe that humans can be good. And if you don't see it, I don't know what to tell you. I can tell you that sometimes when I don't see it, I can spend time in nature in silence and observe what's happening around me. Sometimes I sit at a coffee shop and watch people interacting. I observe some beautiful moments this way. I'll see the parent interact with their child in a loving way. I'll see friends being kind to one another. I'll see strangers holding the door. Sometimes I'll see people being hateful too. But the kindness is still there when I take the time to look. But others may not find those same things when they look around, and that's okay.
That was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. It was very inspirational and so many perspectives in there. And I think that's the most important part, is we're all just going through a journey, doing the best that we can. We all have our own perspectives. That doesn't mean someone's right or wrong within, you know, two things can be true at once. You can have great experiences in the Amish. You can have not great experiences in the Amish. That's not to say that all Amish are bad and all Amish are good. I think all these perspectives are equally as important. So thank you for coming on and sharing yours.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, because good and bad things could also exist in inside of, like, you know, different perspectives. Like, it can be true that my own mother, my oven, she did the best she could with the tools she was given, but it can also be true that she failed me.
Sure.
And her children. Doesn't mean,
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, everyone, go check out Mary. Her podcast will put all of the important links in the description below so you can find her. And thank you again. Do you have any other final thoughts?
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate you, and we appreciate Hannah for coming on for the short period of time that she could join us. Also, both of you have written books. Hannah's book is called Beat, My Journey Through Abuse and the Holdeman Mennonites. We'll put a link in the description. Your book, Mary, Reflections and Memories of an Amish Misfit. We'll also add that in the description. And guys, make sure to leave those encouraging words, those comments, those words of affirmation for Mary and Hannah here for coming on and being vulnerable and sharing. And it also supports the podcast when you do so. Liking and sharing and commenting all help the algorithm. If you want to support the podcast even further, we do have merch at cultstoconsciousness.com under the merch tab. You can become a patron if you like, patreon.com/cultstoconsciousness. You can come to Costa Rica if you want to do something fun and not culty. That's at the end of August. Link is in the description for that. And if you like this video, I will link two more down here below, as well as the videos for Mary and Hannah's interviews in the description. So until next time, follow your highest excitement, be conscious, and be well. Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, it would mean a lot if you could like and subscribe on YouTube and leave a review or a comment to help with our visibility. You can also find me on social media at cults2consciousness or reach out by email at cults2consciousness@gmail.com.